Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kylie Camps, owner of The Kind Parenting Company, wife, proud mom of twin boys, and happiness advocate. This podcast is a place for women who want more from life. It's your time to cultivate more self-care, compassion, happiness, love, and confidence. Let's have real conversations to help you feel better, choose better, and live your best life. Welcome to episode 40. Now, this podcast is a really sensitive topic, and I urge you to use your own discretion as to whether or not this is, in fact, a podcast that you want to listen to or that perhaps you can handle listening to right now. It is a beautiful conversation, but there is a lot of sadness and it involves infant loss. It is such a big, difficult, scary, but needed conversation, I feel, because so many women out there have been impacted, not just women, so many families have been impacted by loss or will be impacted by loss. And the conversation that I have with today's guest really goes into exploring one family's journey through unimaginable heartache. My guest is Elise, and she really bears so much of her soul with you. And as I said, it can get a little bit hard to listen to, so please use your own discretion.
Hey, Elise, thank you so much for making space in your day and, of course, also in your heart. I know that this is a huge thing, and we were just chatting before I pressed record, and I was saying to you that I just am so grateful that you're able to share your story and your personal journey into motherhood. I'm really just honored that you're willing to do so, particularly on the podcast, because I know that we have a lot of listeners who've also experienced loss or know someone close to them who has. And I just think it's an area of life that can be hard to address for so many of us. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and letting me share my story, because it's not often that we get to sort of talk about it or, you know, go into it. So, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to me about too. So, thank you.
So, for full disclosure here, Elise and I and also her husband actually all went to high school together. And even further back than that, her husband and I were in the same kindergarten class too, which I don't know, Elise, have you seen that kindergarten photo?
No, but
it's
I got
so you. Cute. You got it. Chris has the best curls. So we went to high school together, and then as life happens, you know, we leave high school and all of that sort of stuff. But when I fell pregnant with the boy, Elise and I actually connected again just through Facebook, I believe, because through word of mouth I'd found out that she was also pregnant with twins, and it was just really special to be able to chat with another mum who was pregnant with twins. I think that was, we mainly chatted through Facebook back then, and that was in 2013. And in November of that year, our boys were born, and shortly after their arrival, I will never forget receiving a message from you, Elise, and it was the most devastating message. And I know this is hard, but if you can you take us back to 2013 or wherever in your journey that you're comfortable starting with, and share with us what happened back then?
Absolutely. So, so Chris and I obviously decided to start a family and whatnot. So we were trying to get pregnant and nothing was really happening. Nothing was going on. Went and saw fertility doctors and, well, actually just my GP, who really was not much help. So I went to a fertility doctor to see what was going on. And it turned out I had polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is fine because it's a fairly easy fix in regards to trying to get pregnant. However, there is risk of multiples generally, which was fine. I was happy, you know, to take that risk. So we went ahead with some treatments, which wasn't IVF. It was what they call like a monitored cycle. So I was just taking similar drugs to what someone would do for IVF to grow follicles and whatnot. And then they just monitor ovulation, you do your thing, and then come back and see how it worked. So I think it was the first cycle we did. And, and we fell pregnant with twins, which I was sort of half expecting anyway, which was super exciting. And that was, I think, in the August. And then that wasn't long after when we started chatting about when you were pregnant with the boys and whatnot. It was, like you said, it was really nice to have someone else to talk to because not a lot of people had twins.
I didn't know anyone. Yeah.
No. So everyone sort of had one. So it is certainly, it's definitely a different pregnancy and journey. So it was nice to have someone to share that with too. And then your boys were born in the November, which was so exciting. And then my girls were due, what were they due? April. So we still had a little while to go. Anyway, everything was progressing fine. Everything seemed completely normal. The pregnancy was fine. I had just your general, I was just going through the public hospital. So just having the general scans and whatnot that you would have through them, which is usually a little bit more, as you'd know, with twins, because it's a high risk pregnancy. So there was a few more scans and stuff, but nothing out of the ordinary. And I felt really, really good. I was still able to work out. I was going to the gym. Everything was, it was good. And then come to the 22nd of December. So I was getting ready for Christmas and whatnot. And I think me and Chris had gone shopping. So we were just like walking around, you know, getting the last minute things to get done and whatnot. And I was getting
those crazy people that are at shops a couple of days before Christmas. Yeah.
That's definitely us. I know it's ridiculous really, but that's us. So we're there, you know, minding our business, doing our thing. And I was having some, I guess like kind of like period pain cramps, I guess, but nothing too crazy. And again, one with pregnancy, you get, and anyone who's been pregnant, you know, you get random aches and pains, and especially with two, it can be a little bit worse, I guess. So I sort of just put it down to that. I was like, oh, gee, and felt like they were moving, you know, they're moving heaps, and just the pressure of having two babies in there too. So it would have been about 22 weeks at the time. But otherwise, I felt okay.
I was just gonna say, you're right. I can remember as well. Like you do have those aches and that stretching feeling across your belly, and there's all sorts of different pangs. And, you know, I remember even having aches in my ribs because one of the boys was up so high. Like you're just so used to aching.
I know. And that's exactly right. You're sort of just like, oh, well, it's just another pregnancy thing. And, and especially like you said, being two, it just makes it all that more worse, I guess, in that sense, like you just expect it to be worse. So I really just didn't think much of it. And then got home and it sort of continued. I felt a little bit uncomfortable, but I was like, yeah, it's probably nothing. And then we were about to go to bed. It was probably like 9 o'clock, I think, we're about to go to bed. And the pains were just getting sort of, again, I say worse, like they weren't bad, but it was just like a period pain. So I went to go to the toilet, and then all of a sudden my waters broke. And I was like, you know, I didn't know what was going on. It was obviously very confusing. So I called an ambulance and went to the hospital.
Did you know that your waters had broken, which might sound like a silly question, but did you know that's what had happened?
I was fairly certain of it because that's sort of what it looked like. I wasn't sure, but I was pretty sure. Like it, yeah, you could kind of tell just from what you've heard, because obviously I've never had babies, so I didn't know how it all works. So
Because I haven't experienced, and I've heard other women say that they didn't realize that it was their waters breaking, or so you think it's
I was 99% sure. So I freaked out obviously, and we got an ambulance and whatnot, went to the hospital, and we're sort of hoping that we didn't know what to expect, because being a first time mum or first time pregnant, you really don't know a lot of the time. Like I don't think we were well educated enough to really understand everything that was going on. We sort of just was like, oh well, you know, maybe they'll regenerate, you know, the waters will come back, or like we really didn't know what was going on. So we got there, and
prior to that, you didn't have, there was no indication up until that point,
nothing
that anything was amiss.
Nothing, everything was fine. So I'd had everything checked out, you know, I think, so I was 22 weeks, I'd had the 20 week scan 2 weeks prior, and everything was perfect. They were like, yep, everything's great. So We were assuming everything was fine. So we got to hospital and they had a look and they confirmed that definitely twin one's waters had broke. And then they said, we are fairly certain you're also in labor, but we'll have to check. So they also checked my cervix. They said, yep, your cervix is, I think it was about 2 centimeters or something like around that mark. So my cervix was open and basically I was just in early labor. That's what had happened. My body had just gone into early labor. So they said, we'll sit on it. Sometimes it stops, but you know, we just can't be sure. So let's just wait it overnight and see what happens and see what progresses. And if you get to, if it stops and you get to 24 weeks, we'll send you up to the MARTA because 24 weeks is the cutoff for basically when they class a baby as viable, which I hate saying, it's a terrible thing to say, but that's what they say. Thing. It is, but in their words, they were like, 22 weeks is just not viable. If you make 24, then there's definitely options, but until that point, there's really nothing more we can do for you. So just have to sit here and wait it out. So
you stayed in hospital that night?
Yep, so I stayed in hospital, and then unfortunately it did just progress. Like, it just sort of progressed like any other labor. The pains just got worse and worse. And I remember saying to them, like, well, there's two, and you know, there's two, like, and they're both in separate sacs. They weren't identical. They were, they were completely separate sacs and placenta and everything. Yeah, fraternal twins. So I said, well, what about, you know, is there a chance that one might be okay? And they said, well, sometimes you can birth one and the other one may or may not stay. But they said it's possible, but it's rare. But again, you're not going to know until that point in time. So
just massive uncertainty.
Yeah, massive uncertainty. We spent the night in waiting to see what happened, and yeah, it slowly just got worse. So we called family and let them know, and they all came up to be with us while we just basically waited it out. And during that time, I had doctors come in and out to explain things to me because I really just had no idea. I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know what the babies were going to look like. I didn't know what I wanted to do. It was all just so confusing. We had ideas.
Massively overwhelming.
So much, yeah. They come in with all this information. They're like, okay, so you're past 20 weeks now, so that means that these babies are, even though they're not viable, as in they can't survive life out of the womb, but they are classed as, which again it's so silly, they're classed as humans and babies now after 20 weeks. Anything before 20 weeks, they're still obviously babies and humans, but for whatever reason, 20 weeks is where they give them birth and death certificates and acknowledge, I guess, that they were born. So it's a yucky area. It's awful. So like even baby born, if they're born at 19 weeks, like, or 19 weeks and 6 days, they're not going to get a birth and death certificate. But if they're born at 20 weeks, they will, which is just so, it just blows my mind that that's even a thing, because they should all get a birth and death
certificate. It all counts. Yeah, of course.
Exactly. But that's how it is. I didn't know any of this. So they said to me, so because they're past 20 weeks, you'll need to name them because they have birth and death certificates. You'll need to organise a funeral. You'll have to do I was just sitting there like, what? I had no idea. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't believe.
A couple of hours ago, I was at the shops.
Yeah, I was at the shops. Yeah. Everything was fine. And now all of a sudden, I've got to organise funerals and give birth to these babies. And it was just, much to take in. And then they're throwing you, here's support groups and here's this, and you're still in labour. And it was just, it was full on, like, just, yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Oh, it was crazy. So, so the labour just basically progressed and they were born. I ended up having them at about, I can't remember the exact time, but I think Tiana was born at 11:15-ish and then Lily come at 11:30. So they were just born naturally, goes like any other labour, pretty much exactly the same as any other labour, term labour would. And we had to make a decision, do you want to hold them? Do you want to see them? And during the sort of the labour, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought, oh, maybe I don't, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but the hospital staff were very supportive. They're like, no, I think it's a good idea. You should see them and hold them and do the things you want to do with them. So, and Chris was very supportive in that too. So, and I'm really glad I did. I think I would have highly regretted not, because some people just can't bear the thought, they just sort of, I guess they think I can't do it, and that's fine too. But we were lucky enough to be able to see them and hold them and spend some time with them. So, and that's sort of the lead up to their birth.
Yeah, it's just, I can't even imagine being in your shoes or Chris's shoes. And as you said, 1 minute everything is fine and you haven't you know, there's been no red flags raised throughout your pregnancy. And yep. then within the space of a couple of hours, you're being told, you know, words like viable and funerals and you have to name, you know what I mean? And do you want to yep. hold, like, that is just so, so overwhelming. And yeah, I can only imagine. I appreciate you sharing that with us. And, you know, I know that you went through the process then of obviously grieving your beautiful mm-hmm. girls, having their funerals, having to tell everyone, I can imagine mm-hmm. would be something really confronting because it's the end of the year. Like not that the timing of the year matters, but you know, yeah, there would be so many people. Yeah. It's, you know what I mean? Like you're seeing mm-hmm. more people than you would normally. How did you approach sharing the news? Obviously you had your immediate family there. But how did you approach, I guess, sharing that news with your personal wider community?
I think so. I sort of was just so out of it. I couldn't do a lot. So poor Chris had to sort of hold the fort. And it tends to be the way with husbands, which sucks for them because they're expected to sort of be the strong ones and do all that. But and generally mm-hmm. they are able to. And luckily he could do that for me. So he was the one who made most of the phone calls originally, obviously, to our parents and our close family. And then when they were born, I think the next morning he sent a few messages around to just like close friends that obviously would need to know. And then I don't think we put anything on Facebook about it. I think it was more just word of mouth because I sort of just wasn't in a headspace to deal with it, like to send people messages and and explain to them. So I think a lot of it was a lot of people were sort of just dealing with Chris and talking to him and whatnot. So that was sort of more, it was more just word of mouth that we'd tell, you know, we just said, you know, tell people who need to know and whatnot. So
And during that time, obviously I can imagine that you, as you said, that you just felt, I'm guessing, disconnected and out of it and you just had to go into survival mode. What did those weeks look like for you? You know, was it a case of were you able to just, I guess, surrender to the grief in a way and just take time to just be with just you and Chris? Like how did you, I guess what I'm asking is how did you cope?
Yeah, it was hard because like you said, the timing was obviously not ideal because it's Christmas. So everyone's just so happy and they're having the best time and Christmas is everyone loves Christmas. So,
and it's like, I imagine like it would feel like the world's just going on. You know what I mean? Like everyone's just getting on with their Christmas and yet this massively devastating thing's just happened to you. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just sort of stuck. I remember sitting there thinking like, I can't, especially Christmas Day, we did see our, so they were born, they ended up being born on the 23rd of December. So, because I went into labor on the 22nd. So 2 days before Christmas and, I went home Christmas Eve. So they were born the night time of the 23rd. So I went home, I stayed in hospital till the 24th and then went home and, we sort of just, I was happy to just stay home. I would have just been happy to sit in a little bubble at home and cry and, you know, and do all that. And Chris was like, come on, like, let's, you know, he sort of tried to encourage me to, let's just go to our parents' house, you know, like, you don't have to venture far. We don't have to see anyone except for, you know, just those guys, which was probably a good thing. Like, I was happy to just sit in a little ball and not see anyone and just sort of like, yeah, sit with my grief and cry and whatnot. Whereas he's like, you know, you've got to get up, you've got to move. And whatnot. And I think that was really the best thing for me at the time, even though I might not have felt like it. I think he was right.
Putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. So it was just little steps, like just seeing, you know, we just saw them for an hour or two here and there, just enough that I could handle. Like I could only handle a little bit of time, and then I had to just go home and cry it out and do what I needed to do. And then we'd do the same thing the next day. Like someone might come over, as in like was just literally our parents pretty much. And do that. We had a lot of friends just drop off meals and stuff, which was just so nice because, again, that's not something that you are really wanting to do. Like I didn't really want to eat either, but you've got to. And it was nice to have people just sort of, they didn't even, you know, they just were happy to just leave things in Eskies at the door. They didn't feel the need to come, you know, come and see me, which was kind of good because I just didn't want that at the time. And I don't know.
You would have been just using all of your energy just to survive, let alone, you know, you don't want to feel the pressure of having to put a mask on. So I guess what you're sharing there about having smaller interactions, like shorter windows, And then also just allowing yourself to retreat when you need to retreat.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I had to do. And that sort of went on for a couple of weeks, I guess. I think I did venture out to the shop at one point just to, I don't know, feel a bit normal in a way, but even though I didn't, but, you know, just to try and to get out and about. And I think I just went and got a few, you know, just bought a few things. I can't even quite remember, but I do remember going out and everyone was just so happy. And I was like, how are you people? So I don't understand, you know, like, but again, it's Christmas, it was New Year, everyone's having the best time of their lives. And here I am walking around and people would have just seen me in this sad state, but had no idea what was going on.
Not knowing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy to think that, you know, that probably happens to us. We probably see people in the same who've been through crap like that. And you have no idea. So I sort of, and I remember at one point I went up to buy something at a shop, I think, and the lady's like, hi, how are you? And I was like, yeah, good, thanks. She's like, how was your Christmas? And I sort of just looked at her for a second and I thought, oh, I've got two options here. I can tell her the truth or I can just lie and, you know, to not make her feel uncomfortable, because I thought, you know, she's going to get really awkward and she probably doesn't want that. She's just doing her job and being happy, you know, just in retail. So I looked at her, I'm like, oh, it was good, thanks. And she's like, oh, great, have a good New Year, bye. And I remember walking off and I felt guilty for not telling the truth. But then I was like, well, I didn't want to make people feel uncomfortable either. And it's hard when you're sort of in that spot, because you're like, I don't want to be like, it was fucking awful. Like, you know, I lost my children and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But people don't know how to deal with that. So often I'm one to just sort of maybe just say, oh, yeah, it was good, and just lie, which wasn't great. But it's sometimes, again, survival mode. You just don't know what to do. So you just go, oh, yeah, good, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's so many situations in life where we do just say good, thanks, and move on. But I can imagine that with the loss that you just experienced, it is that level of guilt, because you want to acknowledge your beautiful babies. And I think that acknowledging when people do go through a loss can be really powerful for them as well. But it does seem like it does seem like a conversation that people find really hard to have, and understandably so, because it's such a sensitive topic and you just never know, you never want to, I guess, upset or offend, or you just don't know, and everyone's so different. But yeah, I think that we'll be able to touch on that a little more later on in your journey. Now, I know that you were determined to fall pregnant again, and it wasn't too long after Tiana and Lily that you did in fact fall pregnant again. So can you share with us the next part of your journey?
Yeah, so you're right. I definitely was pretty determined. I think I didn't know where to put my focus after having them, because like normally, you know, you have your babies and, you know, anyone has their babies, that's straight away your focus is on them. So I sort of had, I didn't know what to do. Like, I was like, what do I do with my time? Where do I put my focus, you know, to try and get through this grief? And I, whether it's the right thing to do or not, I don't know, but my focus is like, well, you know, we still want to get pregnant, we still want to have babies, let's just, you know, jump back into it. And it was about 3 months. Like, it wasn't straight away, you know, I took a few months to grieve and do what I needed to do and whatnot. And then we we just sort of went back down the same path again of the fertility, and I'm fairly certain again it was pretty much the first go, and we fell pregnant again, which was really exciting and scary. And we were kind of hoping for one, I guess, because we weren't sure exactly what caused us to lose the girls. We were fairly certain it was something called incompetent cervix, but no one could really pinpoint. They just said, sometimes these things happen, which I don't know.
The most frustrating answer.
Yeah. Right. I know, like, you've just lost your babies and they're just like, oh, well, these things happen. Like, I sort of couldn't take, like, I don't know, for an answer. So I did a heap of research afterwards. I was like, there has to be an explanation. Like, you know, these things just don't happen. How does a cervix just open? How do you just, you know, go into labor? And no one had mentioned incompetent cervix to me. So I just did my own Googling, because everyone loves to Google. So I got onto the Google and I started putting it in, you know, symptoms and what happened. And that's probably the one thing that stuck out to me, because that was really the only thing that made sense. So I kind of diagnosed myself, I guess. And I was like, yep, that's what I've got. So when we...
And so was that, sorry, Elise, to cut you off, was that before you fell pregnant again? Or like, yes. Did you have an understanding? Okay, you did.
Yeah.
So then
so
you
felt... I, yeah. That was well before, like that was, yeah, in the months leading up to the boys, because I wanted to be prepared just in case, you know, could this happen again? What can I do to prevent this? So, yeah, definitely before I fell pregnant with them.
So I think we jumped ahead a little bit then because you mentioned the boys and we'd not yet shared. You were hoping. That's okay. You were kind of thinking when you fell pregnant, perhaps having just a singleton pregnancy would be better because you'd already done some Googling and some research on incompetent cervix. And, you know, having obviously a singleton baby would be less pressure, less weight physically on your cervix and less demanding and taxing on your body. So if we can just even pause there for a second, when you took your pregnancy test and you realized you were in fact pregnant, I'm guessing it was just that mixture of trepidation, fear versus excitement, elation that you'd fallen pregnant again?
Yeah, that's basically exactly it. I think I cried, but I was, because I was happy, but then I was, and excited because I was like, oh yes, but then I was nervous because we just didn't know, like you take your pregnancy test and you don't know, is it one, is it two, is, you know, how's this going to go? You know, there's so much fear in it as well. So it's an unusual feeling the second time around because you don't know. So, yeah, it was scary.
And so then your next move is to go and have a dating, or you probably knew how far along you were because it was kind of calculated to fall pregnant, but your next move would have been a scan, which would have revealed, in fact, it was
twins. Yeah. So yeah, we did the scan. My fertility doctor and me and I were we were hopeful for one, but we knew obviously there was a good chance of being two because when I was doing my treatments, I had two follicles there basically. So there's not always an egg in the follicle. There may be not. But we thought, you know what, let's just do it because, you know, I was just so determined and pretty much he couldn't tell me no. So, we were hoping just one, but, we found out it was two. And again, I felt excited there was two because I'd felt like I deserved that, you know, like I'd lost two and so two would be good.
And gotten, but then, so, yeah.
Yeah. But then on the other side of me, I knew that one was a better option for us in regard to incompetent cervix, if that's what I had. Obviously we weren't 100% sure, but, you know, I was fairly certain. But yeah, there was two. So it was like, all right, well, we'll just do this again and fingers crossed, basically.
And so during that pregnancy, I imagine there would have been added appointments and added monitoring even more so on top of just, you know, because as you mentioned earlier, when you are pregnant with multiples, you're automatically classified as high risk. Yep. And then having gone through losing Lily and Tiana, I imagine there would have been even more monitoring. So how did you, I guess, mentally cope with all of that?
Yeah, it was tough. So I think for me, I just wanted the best care and as much monitoring as possible because for me mentally that I knew that's what would help me. Just, you know, because the more you know, I guess, like knowledge is power. So the more I knew what was going on made me feel better. So I had a fertility doctor who I was seeing, and he was happy to continue seeing me just on the side sort of thing. I booked into the hospital I was originally at. So I sort of was with those guys. And then I went and got my own private obstetrician who did the intermediate. I remember we spoke about it years and years ago.
Because we had the same obstetrician, right?
I think I was talking to you about it. And you said he did this intermediate thing because I don't think my healthcare was enough to cover like the pregnancy. So I was like, well, that's perfect because I can get the monitoring I need through a private obstetrician, but then, you know, birth in a public hospital, so it won't, you know, cost me millions of dollars and whatnot. So so I went and saw him and that was really good. So I sort of was seeing him every month because I think that's generally how you go, so once a month with him, and then once a month I would go and see, so in between, so it's sort of every 2 weeks, so 2 weeks I'd go see Warwick, who was my fertility, he's an obstetrician as well, I'd go see him, then the 2 weeks later I'd have my appointment with that doctor, and then because you're in the hospital for whatever reason, I'm not sure if you were the same, but the hospital wanted to see me on the side as well, so I was sort of doing three people on the go, which
rotation
so it was full on, it was really full on because I had appointments all the time, but for me I was cool with that because that's what I needed, because I thought the more monitoring I can get and the more opinions I can get, I guess, because not everyone was sure of what was going on, so it's good to have different people, I think, watching you. So, yeah, I had all three of them on the go at the one time, and in the hope that we would either come up with a solution or catch something if it was going to happen or whatnot. So,
I was just going to say, did you have when you were, you know, obviously the early weeks of being pregnant with your twin boys, did you have I'm imagining there would have been a milestone that you just wanted to reach, you know, you would have wanted to just get to, you know, was there a certain amount of weeks that you were like, if I could just get to this amount of weeks, I'm going to mentally be able to relax a little more?
Yeah, I think for me, my biggest goal was the 22-week mark, because that's when I had the girls. So I thought, let's get to, I mean, I had little steps. So, you know, first was just getting to the dating scan and seeing, you know, if there was a heartbeat or two or whatever. And then it was, you know, your 12-week scan to make sure, you know, there was all bits and pieces and babies were looking good. And then 20-week scan. So I sort of had all those little bits in between. But my biggest goals were the 22-week mark, to get past when the girls are born. And then obviously my next major goal was that 24-week mark, because that's that, you know, golden viability date. And I just knew that if I could hit 24 weeks, then there was some, you know, if they were to come, at least there was something that could be done. So that was where I was at with it.
During all of your monitoring and your rotation with your three different specialists, how were things looking for you?
Yeah. So everything was looking fine. I had spoken to all three of them in regard to my own diagnosis of incompetent cervix. So at first I'd spoken to my fertility doctor originally, because I knew that there was things that could be done to help prevent, you know, the cervix opening. So I spoke to him, and then I spoke to obviously the other obstetrician that I had. And given that they were twins, so what they can do is, if you are diagnosed with incompetent cervix, but it's really sad, they basically, you have to have 2 second trimester losses before anyone will technically diagnose it, which I think is disgusting, because why should you lose two babies before someone says, okay, we'll look into this now? Like, it's
not fair.
It blows my mind that that's even a thing. But anyway, I said to them, look, I know that there's this thing, you can have a stitch placed in the cervix to help hold it together. You know, is this something we should do? Is this going to help? And pretty much everyone who I'd spoken to all said, look, one, we're not sure if that's what you had, and, you know, doing that does come with its own risks. And two, because you've got twins, the statistics say, and again, I hate statistics, but, you know, statistics say that it doesn't help with twins. There's literally no point. Which I said, oh, all right then. So I guess, you know, they were the doctors and I had to believe them. So they said, let's just monitor. It's every 2 weeks. Let's just keep an eye on the cervix, see what's going on with it. We won't go down the path of a stitch. And, you know, if something is to happen, then, you know, we'll discuss those options later on. So I listened to them because they're doctors. And, you know, just hoped for the best, basically. So,
right. And so as you did progress through pregnancy, can you share with us a little bit more about what happened as you got towards, obviously, that 20-week mark? You would have had your the morphology scan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I had the so everything, again, was looking fine. Babies were fine. I got to the 20-week morphology scan, and the first thing I said was, like, check the cervix. Let's see what the length is on it. Let's make sure it's okay. And I was asking that throughout the pregnancy a bit, not heaps, but I was definitely asking. And at 20 weeks it was fine. I think it was 4 centimeters, well, where you would expect it to be at that mark. So they're like, yep, it looks fine, everything's good. And I remember after I'd had the girls, that was one thing I did go back and check on when I had my 20-week scan, because I didn't know anything about the cervix when I had them. Like, it, you know, like, you sort of you can just carry on with your pregnancy and they just tell you things are good. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I really didn't know much, and cervix was not something that was on my mind at that time. So I couldn't have told you what the length was then, because I never asked. But then I went back and had a look, and when I'd had them the 2 weeks prior to that, my cervix was, you know, 4 centimetres enclosed and no, you know, not showing any signs of any issues. So I was in the same boat again at the 20 weeks with the boys. So that was well, that's when I was having boys as well.
And I guess that would have meant that you weren't actually comforted by the fact that it was 4 centimetres at that 20-week scan once you went back and realised, oh, it was the same with the girls.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was still like, Yeah, I was still on edge. Like I was happy to know that it was at a good length, but again, that didn't seem to mean much given what had happened 2 weeks later. So that was where I was a bit like, oh, you know, we'll just have to watch it. So yes, I had that. Everything was fine. And then I'd also done a bit of research again on symptoms and whatnot to look for, like sort of to look for. And again, I hadn't really noticed anything that had changed. And then probably, when did I get to? I think I got to, so I wanted to scan right on the 22-week mark, pretty much when I'd had the girls, I wanted to scan that day just for my own peace of mind, just to know that things were okay. So I had a scan booked for that day. I think that was with my fertility obstetrician doctor. But in the week leading up to that, I was a little bit sick. I felt like I had like a flu, I guess. Like I had sore, you know, I had a bit of aches and pains. My lower back was a little bit sore, probably the 2 days leading up to it. And probably the week prior, I did notice a different change. This is going to sound really gross, but anyone who's had kids knows, in like the discharge, I guess, like there was just, it was different to what it normally was. And I thought, oh, I wonder if that's something of concern. I remember texting one of the obs and I just said, like, I've noticed this, you know, is this to be concerned about? It's slightly different, blah, blah, blah. And he replied back, he said, no, you know, these things, that happens in pregnancy, things change, so I wouldn't be concerned. And I said, oh, all right, then, you know, again, I wasn't sure if I should, something was telling me
push that the
I
wasn't issue, right. Yeah.
Yeah, something was telling me, but again, I sort of was, I'm a pretty chilled, laid back person. So I went, well, they're the doctor, they know. So I was like, yep, all right, he must know. So I just sort of went, that's cool. And I knew I had a scan coming up in about, you know, 4 days, I think it was. So 3 to 4 days. So I thought, well, at least I've got that coming up. So then the day of my scan come, and I didn't go to work that day because I was feeling a bit off. And I had my lower back was a little bit sore, but again, it was my back, so I was not really thinking too much about it. I wasn't having cramps or anything like that. So I took myself up to the, was sort of just near the Mater Mother's Hospital up there is where he was seeing. So I went in there to see him and Chris come with me, and he's like, how are you feeling? I said, yeah, all right. You know, he's like, all right, let's check. Let's see what's going on. He was aware of the day. Like he knew it was a bit of a scary moment for me. So we were just a bit of a milestone. So he was really chilled and just trying to keep things relaxed and scan the babies. Yep, they're looking good. And he's like, all right. So then he went to sort of have a look at the cervix and the scan. And immediately I knew something wasn't right. He just sort of, he was looking at it for a bit and he wasn't saying anything. And I was like, was everything okay? And he's like, I'm not sure. He's sort of just like, let me just have a little bit more of a look. So he was scanning. He goes, all right. And he sat down with us and said, I think your cervix has opened slightly. And I couldn't believe it. I just looked at him. And at this point in time, I wasn't in labor and no waters had broke. So I guess we were ahead in that respect. But the fact that I now had no cervix I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, you're joking. On the exact same day, as the girls, it's happening again.
It would have been such a shock. And did you feel shocked and removed, or were you instantly just like in that moment? I'm just trying to picture being in that moment. Were you overcome with emotion at hearing that news, or were you more like, okay, so this is what it is and what do we do about it? Were you more, I guess, like how did you respond?
That's pretty much what it was. I just thought, well, all I could think was, well, my waters haven't broken. I'm not in, well, I was fairly certain I wasn't labor. I wasn't having pain. So that was, I was thinking, good, well, we're slightly ahead. And he was really great. He said, let me do an internal, let me see where we're at, because I'll get a better picture and we'll go from there. So he had a look and he said, look, your cervix is definitely open, maybe a centimeter. He's like, now this isn't the end of the world. This doesn't mean that, you know, the babies are coming necessarily. So let me make some calls. We've got to get you into hospital and we'll see, you know, take it from there. So he was really good at keeping me calm, I think, you know, to know that this wasn't the end and that, it wasn't ideal, obviously, but it may not be worst case scenario. So he made some calls and sent me off to the MARTA. So I went in there and because I wasn't going privately through him, so sort of the MARTA public hospital took over my care. So I went in to see them and they were probably not as optimistic as he was. They sort of come in and had a look at the scans and sat with me and just said, look, there's really not a lot we can do for you. And I said, well, there has to be something. I mean, I know you can put a stitch in. I've read that there's, you know, emergency stitches and whatnot. Like there's got to be something. And they threw the whole, well, you know, it is twins and whatnot. So it comes with risks. And I said, I'll take risks. Like It's either that or I'm probably going to lose them.
Just do something. Like, help
there's
me.
There's got to be something. You can't just say nothing. Like, there's nothing you can do. So they said, all right, well, I felt like I was bargaining with them because I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to just, you know, sit and cop no for an answer. So they said, all right, how about this? Because I don't know, it was probably about 8 o'clock at night by the time we got to this point. And they said, look, we don't know exactly whether, you know, you could have an infection. That's why this is happening. We're just not sure. They said, let's take a swab, see what's going on, wait till the morning. If nothing has happened, the cervix is not open anymore, and, you know, you haven't got any infections or anything, we'll do an emergency cerclage, they call it, say stitch. So I said, well, all right, I guess that's all I can do is agree with them. At least they were trying to help me out in a way. So, we did that, waited overnight, which was pretty scary. Doctor came in, had a check, said, yep, look, nothing looks as though it's changed. Let's go in, let's do it. So I said, right, excellent. So we went in. They knocked me out and they did the stitch to hold, you know, to try and put it back together. And when I come back to the room and they said, look, everything went well, because there's also a risk, given that my cervix was open, that they could also rupture membranes, like, because it's so close to
It would
everything.
Just be such a delicate procedure, I can only imagine, because even when you said, like, it was opened 1 centimetre, you know, 1 centimetre sounds so small, but when you're talking that your cervix is 4 centimetres, you know, that's a quarter, you know what I mean? Like, it's
exactly, and trying imagine. To pull that, they're trying to pull something together that's not really there, you know, like, it's not, it's open. So they're trying to sort of force it together. And so I come back and they were like, you know, everything went well. There's no rupture of membranes. Everything was looking good. They said it was probably more like 2 centimeters when they got in there by that point in time. So it was a tad harder than they had expected it to be. But at this point in time, it was closed. And basically let's go on bed rest and see what happens. So I think I spent a couple of days in hospital, just like, I think all I got up to do was go to the toilet and that was it. I was like, I'm not even going to shower. Like, I'm just going to lay here. So I spent a couple of days in, then they sent me home. They said, look, given that, again, you're still under that viability at this point, I was probably getting close to the 23-week mark. They said, go home, rest. And I can't remember where we were going to go from there. I think maybe they wanted me to come in once a week or something and see how it was going, but I didn't want to go. But at the same time, I guess, like they said, there was really nothing more they could do for me unless something was going to happen. There was probably no point in me being hospital. I might as well be at home and resting, you know, in my own environment. So, I was sent home and I did the same thing at home. I laid. I think I showered maybe every 2 days or something. Like, it was all I could bear to get up for.
The very bare minimum, yeah.
Absolute bare minimum. Like, I'd get up for the toilet. That was it. I drank, you know, anything I ate, drank. I did everything laying down. I didn't even sit. Like, I just wanted to lay because I just thought, this is the – I've just got to
get the weight off the cervix, yeah.
Yeah. They don't suggest, like, I think a lot of the research suggests that bed rest doesn't help a lot, at the end of the day, to me it makes sense. Like, you're taking the weight off, surely it has to do something. So that's what I wanted to do. So I think I spent about a week at home, and then I sort of just got to a point where it was starting to get a bit too much for me. So we went in for a checkup, and I think it was because I was like, oh, something's happened, has my water broke? I don't know. I was freaking out. So we went in and they decided it was best for me to just stay in the hospital because I just mentally couldn't cope with being at home, just not knowing, you know, like, and we live a good,
oh my gosh,
45 minutes away. So
just the anxiety, of course you'd want to have just an expert just standing by you at every single minute.
Yeah. That's like, exactly, you're like, right.
I've been here. Yeah. It would just be awful. And yeah, so was that getting closer to the 24 week mark?
Yes, I think that was around 23 and 3 days. So we were getting there. We're getting really, really close. And then so I went back into the hospital. They just said, right, okay, let's just keep you in. Let's just keep you here till at least 28 weeks. So if I can get to 28 weeks, that's when they would suggest possibly sending me home, because at that point, you know, babies have such a high rate of survival that if they were to come, it wouldn't be as bad.
You could get to the hospital, yeah.
Yeah, I could get to the hospital. It won't be as awful. So I said, all right, that sounds good. Let's do that. So they pretty much, because no one really knows 100% heaps about it, it's still a very unknown topic and how to approach it, especially when you're at the point I was. So really it was just like every day they'd come in, they're like, you're still pregnant? Sweet. Cool. Excellent. Okay, cool. We'll see you tomorrow. Because that's the goal. That was just the goal, to stay pregnant. That's all we wanted to do. The doctors were not keen on really looking, touching, doing too much. They just thought the more we leave it, you know, the better it will be. So let's just do that. So that was all going well. And then I think I got to 23 and I think it was 23 and 4 days, about two or three days later, I think it was, a doctor come in who'd been on leave. I think she was the one, I don't think she did the stitch, but she was the one looking after me. And she's like, oh, I don't know, I kind of want to have a look just to see, but I'm, you know, I don't really know. And she's like, oh, look, I'll just do a quick internal and we'll just sort of, I just want to make sure the stitch is still holding, everything's fine. I said, oh, all right, then, if that's what you want to do. Again, doctors know best. So she did a super quick internal. She's like, yep, everything looks good. You know, I can still see it's closed. I'm happy. I was like, cool, excellent. So she, that was sort of in the morning. And then she left. And then it was probably about lunch, bit after lunchtime. I thought, I'm just going to get up to go to the toilet. And I stood up. And immediately I stood up and my waters broke. And I knew it was, that's exactly what it was. That gush, like it was just that gush of water just come out. Because I thought, oh, what's that? And I was like, just freaked out. I ran to the toilet, pressed the button to try and get someone to come in. I was bawling. I was like, my waters broke. Like, we're so close. Like, we've got like 2 days to 24 weeks. And in the time, which I forgot to mention, during that time I was in bed rest in the hospital, I had like the neonatal care specialist coming in every day, and they're talking to me. So at 23 weeks, they're like, here's your survival rate. At 23 weeks and 1 day, here it is. And 23 weeks and 2 days, here it is. And they,
so you're literally just crossing down the days going, I need to get through today. I need to get through today.
Yeah. Right. And just watching the clock, 'cause I couldn't do anything else. And it was awful because they're telling you, like, they want to tell you the risks involved, because you need to make a decision. Do you want to resus or not? And that's essentially what they want to know. Because if I was to go into labor really quickly or whatever, they need to know whether I've chosen to resus or not, so they have teams ready to go or not. So I had to make a decision. Basically, like, I'd be like, all right, well, come see me tomorrow.
Like, what and, the odds are today, yeah.
Yeah, basically. So I think that
morning
they come and see me, and I said to them, I know 24 weeks is viable, but look, can we say, all right, if they're born at 23 weeks and 6 days, resus. So if it's before that, we won't. If it's 23, 6 days, let's do it. And they were like, all right, that's your decision? I said, yep. And they're like, okay, cool, that's your decision. I've read the risks. I know what's involved. Let's do that. So this was 23 weeks and 5 days, I think I was at that point. And I thought, oh, my God. So, again, I wasn't in labor, but my waters had broke.
And you've been there before, you know. Like, I can only imagine you're going, fuck, like, how? Like, how can this be happening to us again?
That's exactly what it was. I couldn't believe we were there again. So they took me, so I was sharing a room with someone. They ended up giving me my own room, which I think was a good idea. And they did a scan and they were like, okay, yep, definitely waters have broke. There's still some there, but it's broken. However, you know, you're not in labor, so it can regenerate, it can fix itself. You know, people have gone weeks with having their waters broke. So really now we're just monitoring it and making sure there's no infection, because that's then your biggest concern.
The next risk, yeah.
Yeah. So I said, all right, well, and the nurses were amazing. You know, they're like, it's okay. Like, you know, I've seen people in here on bed rest who've had waters broke for 4 weeks. You know, like, you could get further. It's okay. So, like, rightio. So that was sort of in the afternoon, night. Got through that night, got to the next day, same thing, everything was fine. And then they wanted to scan, I don't know why, for whatever reason, they wanted to do another scan. I can't even really remember why. I was 23 weeks and 6 days. So they took me down. That was in the afternoon, checked babies, everything's looking good. Waters was, you know, the same situation. Brought me back up. And then I remember starting to feel those cramps start, and I was like, oh, God, here we go. And I didn't say anything. I sort of just sat on it. And then I said to Chris, I think I'm in labor. And he's like, are you joking? I said, no, I can just feel, you know, because I'd done it before, so I knew. And I said, I'm fairly certain. So I called a nurse in and she gave me some drugs to sort of help stop it. That didn't work. And then, again, it just progressed. It was exactly the same as the girls. It just progressed like any other labor, just a lot quicker this time. So they called up people. Yep, definitely in labor. Because I was 23 weeks and 6 days on the dot, I'd wanted resus from then, so that was the decision to do that, which was kind of lucky, I guess, because had it been the day before, they wouldn't have
made
that cut off. So, so we went down to labor and delivery, and I think, yeah, I was sort of like mid to the labour. I ended up getting an epidural because they suggested it was a good idea, just given everything that was probably going to go on. So there's millions of people in the room. And then while I was in there, they were just sort of doing internal because the stitch was still at this point. So they wanted to try and see what was going on. Was it ripped? Can they get it out? What was going on? So they were sort of doing that. And in the middle of doing that, the doctor sort of had this look on her face. And then she said to me, oh, I've got some news. She said Twin One's cord has basically prolapsed, so it's come down first before the baby, and that's bad news. Like that's never good news, and most babies won't survive that happening. Mm-hmm. It can happen at term, but it's rare because the babies are so much bigger. But because he was a lot smaller, they just said, they pretty much were just like, yeah, that baby's probably not going to survive. And then that's pretty much how they put it. This baby's probably not going to survive, and just went, we'll just give you some time to take that in. We'll leave and we'll come back in a minute. And I was like,
So you've had an epidural at that point, and then they're telling you that, and then they leave the room.
Yeah, they just said your twin one's not going to survive. And I was like, I didn't know. I just was like, what?
How do you even process that amongst all the chaos?
Well, exactly. I'm not prepared for this. Like, I'm prepared for resource. This is what I wanted. So anyway, I had a massive, obviously, meltdown and whatnot, and then Chris is like, we have to stay calm. Like, you've still got another one in there. You know, you've got to just got to get through this. So, yeah. So it was just insane. So the nurses and doctors all come back in. They're like, all right, you know, I haven't dealt with it. I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. But you know, I've just got to focus on what was going on and push through. So, we started. I think the pushing stage for twin one, and I specifically remember. Someone come in from the neonatal care. So they had two teams ready. They didn't realize at this point. And someone come in to say, like, you know, we have two teams ready to go. And I remember one nurse just yelling, she's like, there will be no resus on twin one. I've already said that. There's no resus on twin one. And I'm like,
For God's sake.
Guys, don't have to be so blunt about it. Like, I mean, I know that there's a lot going on, but far out. So
it's your baby. It's your baby.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was insane. So that went on. Twin one was Jet, he was born, and then the next step was trying to keep twin two, who's Ty, in as long as possible. So we had I had a drip in me that had magnesium is what they give to babies. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's for brain development, but they like to keep that in as long as possible to try and give them as much of that as they can. So I think they needed at least 3 hours, and I mean, and this had been only going on for a couple of hours, so he sort of wasn't going to get enough. But we were just like, all right, let's just see how long twin two can stay in for. Like, I didn't need to push.
Like every minute counts.
Every minute counts. Let's just wait and see. And because I had the epidural, I couldn't quite tell. So I sort of got to spend a bit of time with Jet and give him a cuddle and stuff while we were waiting. And then all of a sudden, a doctor was like, "Nah, I don't know. I can't remember what happened, but basically." This other doctor come in who I hadn't even seen. I don't know who it was. He just went, no, I've got to get twin two out now. Get the team ready. God. And I think what had happened in the meantime between Jet being born and Ty still being in there is the neonatal team left because they thought, no, there was no resus. So then they're yelling because they're like, there's still another one. So they got them back down as fast as they could. And that was sort of at the time when the doctor was like, this other twin needs to be born. So, he pretty much just broke my waters, shoved his hand in and pulled him out. It was just like this very fast and quick thing that happened. And all of a sudden he was out. And I remember just sort of seeing someone take him around this sort of, they have like a door and this little thing. And he went around there and I didn't really know what was going on. I just knew that he was taken away. And
were you still holding Jet? Like, were you able to hold Jet for long?
Not at that time.
I can't even imagine.
I gave him a cuddle for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then they took him away once things started to get a little bit more hectic. So they just took him and wrapped him and placed him into one of the cots while all the other stuff was going on. And then it was probably a good 45 minutes or an hour after Ty was born that we finally got to have him back, because obviously they needed to do what they normally do after you've had a baby and checkups and whatnot. So So I didn't get to hold him through that process, but then, you know, we did get him back not too long afterwards. So Chris went with Ty to see what was going on with him and come back and, you know, just told me that they'd intubated him and he was as good as he could be at that point in time. So, that's pretty much how that went down. And then I got to after sort of everything was done and dusted in the labor delivery room, they took Jet away for a bit and then took me up to see Ty in the special care ward just briefly and to sort of explain what was going on. And then, yeah, and that was it. And then I was back up in my room and trying to comprehend what had just happened.
It must have just been like, I just can't even imagine how you actually cope with that, how you don't just shut down in that moment of having that news that, you know, Jet's not going to survive, and then having the harshness, you know, the business, not, I don't want to say business as usual, but, you know, the way that I guess some of the staff were speaking, and then having delivered Ty and then Ty going to special care, but also understanding he's born so, you know, they're both born so early, and you've had all of the stats drilled into you. So you're not this time, like, you know what I mean? Like, you have your eyes, I guess, opened a little bit more, but of course you must have just had so much hope in your heart for Ty as well. And so, yeah, I'm not going to ask you how you did it, because I think it would actually be near impossible to answer. But during that time when Ty was in special care, or is it the NICU?
The NICU. So neonatal intensive care.
Yeah. Yeah. So how long was he there for?
So he was there for 5 days, and then he so we went back up to the ward and everything, and I spent 4 days in the hospital. I mean, I could have gone home, you know, within a day, but they were understanding that I didn't want to go far from my baby. I wanted to be there as well as Jet too, because he was there as well. So I sort of wanted to be able to see them both as much as I could. It was hard, because you've got one baby you're grieving for and one that
you're trying to fighting
for their life. Yeah. So I had to go through, it was hard because Ty needed obviously breast milk and food. So my milk come in like normal. I had to express to keep up with the demands for what he needed. So you're trying to do all that normal stuff that you would, even, you know, any baby that's in special care or with you. But then trying to make time for your other baby who you're grieving for
was physically to cope with both of that.
I sort of had to just say, right, it sounds just crazy to think about, like, okay, during the day I'm going to go down with Ty, I'm going to do what I need to do, and then at night time I get Jet with me, and that was my time to spend with him. So I sort of had to, you know,
compartmentalize.
Just this is what I'm going to do here, and this is what I'm going to do here. That was sort of the only way I could cope with it and figure out how to make time for both of them.
Just such a hideous decision to have to try and make. It's a hideous thing to even just try and compartmentalize. I can only imagine.
It was awful. So so that's sort of just how it went for the 2 days. And, you know, I had family and some friends come and visit, which was really nice. So if they were willing to meet Jet, I was happy for them too. Some did, some didn't. It was entirely their decision, because it's something that people, it's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, if they wanted to, I was totally cool with that. And if they didn't, that was fine. I had a couple of some family come down and see Ty and the NICU as well. So that was really nice to be able to, you know, bring people down. You have to be very careful with it, obviously, because they're so little, but, you know, just one at a time and stuff. So we did that for the few days, and everything was looking quite good. Ty was doing pretty well.
How much did he weigh, Elise? How much did Ty weigh?
He was 616 grams, and he was about 30.5 centimetres long. So, unbelievably small. You just can't even imagine how little. So, he was doing really well. And then I was discharged on, so he would have been four or five days old. He must have been 4 days old. So I went home, and everything was, like I said, looking okay. They were a little concerned about a couple of things, but they were just going to monitor and see what was going on. So I went home, and I was ringing up through the night because, you know, as you do, checking how is he, what's going on. And then we came back that day, and they said, oh, actually, no, it must have been the second day. We must have gone home on day three. I can't quite remember. It's all such a blur. Basically, I come back and they said, look, his things aren't looking too great. We're not too sure what's going on. He's got some sort of infection, but we just don't know what it is at this point in time. So we're just going to take a, like, grow a culture and see if we can figure out what it is. His intubation, so he needed to go back up to, like, say, 80% or 90% or whatever it was that he needed. So he was slowly going downhill. So they said, we'll wait and see what's going on. They didn't tell me a lot. They were just trying to keep me calm, I think. And then they said to me, oh, the doctors will want to see you probably tomorrow. And I said to them, no, I need to see them now. Like, if there's something seriously going on, I need to know now because I need to start preparing. I need to know what's going to happen. So they said, all right, well, we should have, you know, results back soon and we'll get the doctors to come and see you. So
and I can imagine at this point in time, everything that you've been through, there's no amount of reassuring or, you know what I mean? Like, you've already had people tell you to wait and wait it out. And, you know, you never know. Yeah. It could be fine. So I'm imagining that you're losing faith.
Yep, I was. Yep, exactly right. And I wanted the truth, but I also, you know, you wanted it told to you gently, but you needed to know exactly what was going on. So, the doctors took us in. They said basically that they did lumbar punctures on him, which is just an awful thing to think about at such a little age. But they did, and they said, it's come back positive for meningitis, and we are fairly certain it's gone to his brain and whatnot. So they said that, you know, basically I have two options. We can wait and just see what happens and watch him, or you can let him go. It's entirely up to you. They said that, they can't really give you any definite prognosis, obviously, but you could already see the effects of it. Like, his little hands were starting to go a bit funny and you could just see that it wasn't good. Like, they were going to do a brain scan to see what was going on as well. But I could tell.
You knew.
Yep, I knew. So they just sat with us and said, you need to make a decision and you don't have to make it right now, obviously, but soon, because they said he may go on to survive this, but you don't know what implications it's going to have for him. He may not walk, he may not talk, he may not, you just don't know. It could be minor or it could be quite severe disability. And they said, you and your husband, you know, me and Chris had to talk it out, because do we want to,
many decisions. Yeah.
Put him through a life like that? Because it changes everything for you. Like, I may never work again. I financially, how do we afford it? But then they said, if you decide to let him go now, you know, then you've also got to be okay with that, because, you know, I've seen families split up because someone's like, well, you wanted to, or, you know, they didn't make the decision together. So
there's no good outcome in that situation. No.
There's not at all. So you have to just be united, I guess, in that sense with your decision and be 100% sure that you're both on the same page, I guess.
Page, yeah.
Yeah, so we decided it was easier for him to go, which, sorry.
Kinder on him. I'm sitting here in tears, so I can only imagine having to, you know what, that's a decision that would have just come from pure love of looking at your baby.
Yeah.
And that would have been, like, your situation, that would have been the fucking last thing you wanted to say. You know, there's no way that you would imagine having to make that choice or in any circumstance that you would have to utter those words. But that mothering love, that mothering love, knowing I can't put my baby through any more suffering.
Yeah, it's that's really exactly what it was. You don't know. Like, I didn't want him to live a life of, you know, being in a wheelchair or, you know, not being able to play and whatnot. So
there's so many things that you just wouldn't know. And it's not even, you know, you don't know what the quality of life would be like. And, of course, there are millions of people out there who have disabilities and they live really full, wonderful lives. But you just don't know what the actual prognosis is. But also, hearing you speak and saying, like, his little hands and like, you knew. And I'm sure there would have been, you know, I don't know, you know, your faith and your beliefs, but I imagine that there would be some level of knowing, you know, what my little, you know, Ty needs to go and be with his brother now. Yeah, and yeah, there with was his that sisters. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, thank that's God. Exactly. It's, yeah, it was not an easy decision, but that's what we decided to do. And it was, you know, it was for the best, I think, for him. Like, you'll never know. You know, you've got the what ifs all the time. Like, what if I hadn't, or,
you know, maybe I should, to yourself with those.
But, yeah, it's hard, you know. Was I being selfish? Was I not? Like, you don't know. But at the end of the day, that was the decision that was made. And, you know, like, I'm at peace with that now because I have to be. But it's never okay. Like, it'll never be okay.
No, of course not. Like, as we said, there's absolutely no outcome in that situation, than an absolute miraculous disappearance of meningitis. You know, other than that, there's nothing that was going to come out of that, you know, awful situation at all. So you had 5 days with Ty.
Yeah.
And just, I can only imagine the roller coaster of extreme emotions. In fact, I don't even think I can imagine. You know, I can sit here and say, oh, I can imagine, but I can't, because you just, until you live it, you've got no idea.
No.
And I'm sure that it's something that only, you can't even put into words. But I wanted to ask, how did you want people to treat you and Chris after the loss of your fourth baby? You know, it's not even about, you know, your fourth. It's just, how did you want people to treat you? And the reason I wanted to ask this question, Elise, in particular, is I feel as though a lot of people get more tangled up in their own discomfort or a projection of what they imagine the other person might be feeling. But I know, you know, I remember even after you had the girls, like, I think I sent you a message on Mother's Day just saying, like, happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And you just don't know what the right thing is. And of course, for each family, it's different. But for your family, what did you want from those around you?
It's hard to, I sort of just wanted, I guess, like, acknowledgement, you know, that I was a mum and that I had had, you know, that I'd had four babies, and even though they're not here, you know, I did everything that anyone else would. I was pregnant.
Still a
I
went mom. Through
labor. Yeah, you're still a mum. Like, I think the difference when they're not with you is you're not a parent, I guess. So you're still a mum. You're still a dad. You're not a parent because you haven't got a child to parent, I guess, in front of you. So I think it was more just that, and just knowing that you supported, you know, knowing that people cared. Like, they don't have to really say, I didn't really need anyone to say anything. It's just knowing that if I needed to talk to someone, you know, someone would be there for me. Just letting you know, like, letting us know that they cared, was really the biggest thing. And like you said, that kind of stuff, like Mother's Day, you know, getting a message on Mother's Day was just so nice, because some people forget, or, you know, like you said, they feel awkward because they don't know what to say. But just even just a message saying, like, thinking of you, or, you know, happy Mother's Day or something like that. Like, it may not be happy, but you're still acknowledging
just
the fact
thinking
that
of you.
Mom.
Yeah, that you're a mom.
Yeah, or just thinking of you. It's just things like that, I guess, and not being forgotten, because I think, like you said, people, and death in general, people are very uncomfortable with, particularly children, because it's just so out of the norm. It's not the normal thing to happen.
No.
So, not disappearing, I guess, is all you want. Just people to sort of, I just wanted normality in a way, as well as them being remembered. Like, I didn't have to go into detail. One thing I did want to do is I wanted to tell people what had happened, or I wanted to talk about my birth, because people talk about their births and, you know, that seems to
share their birth story.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to share my birth story of what happened, and some people were cool with it, and some people, you know, didn't want to know, and that's fine too. But yeah, just as long as people don't
having
run,
the option
run
to talk. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's all it is, really.
I think that's going to be really, really valuable for our community to hear that, because it is. It's just remembering that, you know, if someone in your life has gone through it, it's fucking huge, and they might want to talk about it. And holding that space for them, if you can, is a big thing. And you know, I feel like we could talk for hours and hours and hours and hours, but I'm mindful that we are on a bit of a time limit, both of us.
Absolutely,
but I wanted to just say, you're just so amazing. I'm just sitting here listening to you, and, like, just, I know, I'm sure that everything you've gone through, having someone tell you that you're amazing actually isn't worth that much, but it's just inspiring how even just your ability to say, no, I want to stitch. And I think it's incredible. And I know that you and Chris, you stayed united during what must have been incredibly dark times. It just would have been so unimaginable. And I know that you went on to fundraise and help other families. Can you share some of, some of those actions that you took, and then also let us know where you went to from there as well?
So I put a lot of focus because, again, like I had nowhere to put my focus. So this time I needed a bit of a break from trying to get pregnant, I think, and whatnot. So I put my focus into fundraising. So I fundraised for something called a cuddle cot. It's not something I knew about after the girls, but I did know about it. I found it after I'd had the girls, I should say, and I knew about it for when I had the boys. So basically what they are is a kind of like a bassinet with a cooling system in them. So they've got these cooling pads that sit underneath sort of the bassinet, I guess, that you can put the babies on to keep them cool so that, you know, you can keep them with you a longer amount of time rather than them having to be touched up. Yeah,
in the room with you. Yeah.
Whereas when I had the boys, I did ask for one because I knew about it at the time. Jet in particular, because I was still in the hospital, and really sadly, I couldn't get one because they had two and they were being used, which is just incredibly sad to think that there was another two parents in there going through the same thing as me, and I wasn't able to use it. So that was devastating. So I thought I need to fundraise and get these out there because the first hospital I was at didn't have one, didn't know about them, and the MARTA clearly still didn't even have enough at the time. So, I put my sole focus into fundraising, and we fundraised enough for two, which was amazing. So it goes, you know, in memory of my children as well. So I gave one to Redlands Hospital, so they have one there. And obviously I gave it to them in the hope it never gets used because that's ideally what you want, because no one ever wants to have to use one. But, you know, it's there if the need arises. So yeah, we sent one there, and then the MARTA, I think in that time, ended up getting another one from somewhere else. They might end up with three. So we gave the other one to Sunnybank Hospital because I have my mum's friend works there as a midwife, and they didn't have one, so they graciously accepted one as well. So yeah, we put our effort
That's
into
incredible.
That.
Incredible. It was so really so generous of you to put the effort and the energy and the love into that. And like you said, of course, you don't want any other family to have to use one, but the facts are that they will be being used, and I'm sure being appreciated by the families that are going through such a difficult time as well.
Yeah.
And now, a couple of years on.
So, yeah, that was the boys were born 2014. And then we again went back down the same path of, you know, trying again. And we tried IVF this time in the hope for one because we were like, we just have to have one. Like, two is just clearly not ideal and not going to work. So we did IVF a couple of cycles. They didn't unfortunately work, so that really sucked. So we went back down the same path again as how we fell pregnant with the others. And I fell pregnant again, maybe two or three cycles in. And again, we were cautiously waiting to see, what was going on, one or two, whatever. And I remember I went for a scan at about 5 weeks. I think my doctor was pretty keen to see too. Not that there's heartbeats at that point or heartbeat, but we wanted to see. And he did a scan. And again, we could see there was no heartbeats because it was still 5 weeks, but we could see two sacks, and we were like, oh good, excellent, here we go again, twins again, right? But I thought, you know what, I'm getting a stitch, I don't care what the statistics say, if this is the case, you know, let's just, I was so much
give
more
me prepared. All the stitches,
everything, just put 5,000 in, I don't care, just
get this done. Staple that sucker up.
Exactly right. So but again, this was very 5 weeks, I mean, like, there's no heartbeats, and we didn't even know what was going to happen. So we went back at, you know, the 7 week mark for a dating scan, and one had a really strong heartbeat and one didn't have a very, it was there, but it was very weak and not great, which is sad, obviously. But for us, we thought, you know, if this doesn't work out, then it sounds awful to say, but it was the ideal situation because we just needed one, like one was what we needed to be able to hopefully carry to term. And we kept an eye on that one. And then that baby did sort of just miscarry at about 8 weeks. So I was sad that happened, but relieved, I think, at that point in time, because I thought, we've got one now, you know.
Holy shit. Like, throughout your journey, how many times can you feel conflicting emotions?
It just kept happening.
Polarizing, like one, you know, just straddling that line of you know, being happy for one reason and devastated for another.
Yeah, it's quite mind-blowing, really, that happens. But, you know, I was just in a mindset, was I thought, well, we've got one, and we've got one strong heartbeat, and this is amazing. Let's, you know, let's do it. Let's see how this goes. And, again, they were fairly certain it was incompetent cervix, but I don't know, no one wants to label it, I don't think. So the doctor, he said, I'll put a stitch in, obviously. I said, of course you will. You will be putting a stitch in. There's no taking no for an answer here. And by this time I'd had my so it was about a year later, so I'd had my healthcare kick in and everything. So this is 2015. So I was able to have my private OB, which was great. He put a stitch in at 12 weeks preventative. And then I had scans every 2 weeks up till 20 weeks. And then everything was holding well. And then I went to weekly scans from 20 to 24, and I ended up just staying weekly scans from then on because I had to.
Like, Elise, I would have just been sleeping outside my obstetrician's office.
I said to him at one point, I said to him, how much does one of these cost, these machines? Because, like, I'm kind
of going to buy one.
I thought that I'll just buy one because, like, I know what I'm looking at. I've looked at these scans that many times. I know when I've done that much research. I'm asking him. I'm telling him to check everything. Like, he pretty much did what I told him to do, which was hilarious. But he obliged. He was a great doctor and he was amazing. And and I said, look, I'll just buy one. He's like, oh, you're looking at 40 grand. I was like, phew. It might be worth it. Anyway, reality is it's not. I just said, yeah, I'm coming in. He said, you do what you need to do. If it's every week, fine by me. I said, good, that's excellent. I did try it 1.2 weeks, and I think I called him up after a week. I was like, I'm freaking out, you know, like, can I come in? He's like, absolutely. So, so we did weekly scans. We checked everything. I put myself on bed rest from 20 to 24 weeks. Not on the doctor's advice. I just did it on my own accord because I just thought, you know, better to be safe than sorry. So
I put myself on bed rest. I can imagine you would have felt like you just had to be doing as much as you can.
Yes, everything. I just wanted to do everything I could. You know, he said, you don't have to do that. I said, well, I'm going to, you know, I have to do what I feel is right. So I did that, did my weekly scans. We got to 24, which was awesome. And then every 2 weeks for me was a milestone because every 2 weeks is just so much better. Like 26 weeks is better and 28 and so on and so forth. So, so we just sort of, we did that. I think I went back to work. I took some time off work, went back at about 25 weeks and just worked 3 days a week. And in between resting up till about 32, 33 weeks. And then I went off after that just mentally too. It was just a bit too much for me and so much going on. So everything was looking perfect. Everything was holding. Baby was fine. And then believe it or not, we got to so stitch was going to come out at about 30. They normally take it out about 37 weeks, but I did a bit of negotiating. I was like, what about, like, I don't know, 36 and a half? Like, I needed this baby out and alive, and I just said to him, you know, he goes, oh, all right, yep, no, that sounds good, I guess we can do that. So I got to the date of stitch removal, and I remember the day before he booked it in, he said to me, oh, I know you want to, we're going to do it Friday. And I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, Friday is Friday the 13th. It was a May, Friday the 13th. I said, yeah. And he goes, you cool with that? Like, you know, he's like, I'm just checking.
Are you superstitious?
Yeah.
Was this still the same OB? Was this the one that you and I both had?
No, I ended up seeing my fertility doctor, OB. Yeah, so no, it wasn't him. Yeah. Anyway, so he said to me, oh, you know, do you want to? I said, yep, I don't care. Like, I'm not superstitious. It's fine. Let's do it. I had a few.
You're like, mate, I've had a whole lot of bad luck. The last thing that I'm worried about is the freaking day.
Exactly. I did not care. I was like, let's just do it. And, I mean, it was just for the removal. So, like, I may or may not have had the baby that day. We weren't really sure, but, you know, just in case. So yeah, when it was quite surreal, really going in and having that out, didn't go to plan. But I ended up being induced that day because the stitch didn't come out quite how it was meant to. I won't go into the detail, but it didn't. So I ended up being induced, which I was like, oh God, I wasn't really prepared for this, but all right, you know, let's do it. Let's get this done. Cause he did say to me, he's like, we can hold out a couple of days and see. And I was like, nah, let's just do it. Like, I'm ready. Let's just have this baby, get it out. I need this done. So, yeah, so I think I was in labor for maybe 8 hours, and I had my son Oliver, at 10:30 that night. So,
oh my gosh, and I've got the biggest smile on my face because I know, like,
Oh,
because he's here and he's asleep right now. And he's asleep right now under your roof.
3 and a half. Like, yeah. I can't believe it was that long ago.
And he looks like he's a mini Chris.
He does, hey. He's, he's just a little tiny dad, basically. And he was here and it was surreal. Like, I just had this baby. And, it was amazing. It was the best. There was tears everywhere.
You got to take him home.
I got to take him home and can have a normal life with this baby. So we had him and everything was awesome. And people would ask me, you do you want any more kids? And I'm like, oh god, I don't know. Like, I'm just happy to have him. Like, I maybe later on I'll see how I go, but at this point in time, he's all I ever wanted. And I'm happy. So we just were living life, everything was great, and then because I had polycystic ovaries, I obviously didn't think I could fall pregnant on my own. I thought I needed all my fertility and whatnot, so that was something I considered going down later on down the track, but I'd have to think about it given twins, like, is it worth it? You know, there's so many things to think about. Oh, I know. And like, I was like, I'm just happy with him. Like, if he's all I have, I'm cool with this. Like, that's fine. So, we'd talked about it, but it was wait and see. And then, he was just over one. And, I think I come home from work one day and I was like, something feels odd. I feel strange. What's going on? I just, like, my boobs felt weird. And I was like, all of a sudden I thought, can I be pregnant? I'm like, no, there's no way. Like, I can't even get pregnant. And there's just no way. So I sort of dismissed it for a bit. And then it was playing in my mind. I thought, I had like an old pregnancy test from, I don't know, ages. It was probably out of date, I'm pretty sure. I was like, I'll just pee on it and see what happens. But I'm not expecting anything. And sure enough, two lines come up. And then I thought, okay, whoa, like, this is out of date.
Wow.
Yeah, this really isn't possible, is it? And it's probably not even for real, and maybe it's just I don't know. So Chris came home from work and I, like, come running out. I was like, you're not going to believe this. And I showed him the stick and he's like, what? I said, I know, but I said, this is old. Like, this is out of date. I'm going to go to the shop and buy 5,000 pregnancy tests and I'll come back and we'll see. Like, we'll see. So I'm like that crazy person. I'm like, Random Chemist Warehouse, got like one of everything. Or two
the
of everything.
Whole basket.
Come back with a basket of pregnancy tests. Like, come back
and
home.
A couple of litres of water.
Yeah, pretty much. Got exactly what I mean. And and I come home and I started peeing on about 50 million sticks and they're all coming out positive. I was like, what? I can't even believe this. I'm pregnant again. Like, he's only one. I never really expected this, but I was this time I was just excited because I thought, wow, like, I didn't
have to
do anything.
Different, yeah.
It was scary again, but it was because I thought, how do I do this with another, like a toddler that needs me as well? So I remember calling my ob. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. And he was pretty shocked. He's like, oh my gosh, well, that's amazing. You know, come in, let's get some, run some tests, see what happens. So I went in and, we got to 7 weeks, checked it, one baby this time, which is even better, like just one. I was like, I can't believe this. We just had the one. And again, I just said, let's do the same thing. Let's get the stitch done. I had a few more concerns this time in regards to having a little boy, like a toddler to run around with.
Cause
I
was run
like,
after, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
put yourself on bed rest.
Yeah, I can't. Like, the last time I could, I can't rest this time. And he was of the opinion I didn't really need to rest last time. So he sort of was of the same opinion again. He said, look, just take it easy, don't lift if you can, again, try not to lift a one-year-old, but, just do the best you can, really. And keep, we'll keep an eye on things. So we basically did the same thing. I didn't have weekly scans this time. I wasn't as uptight, I think, because I didn't have time to be. I had a little boy to run around with. And and we had the stitch done and then everything went fine again. And again, I didn't even rest this time because I couldn't, and it held perfectly. And same thing, had stitch out. And then I had a little girl, Amelia, or Emmy, we call her. And that was about 21 months ago. So,
and I'm looking at a photo of her right now.
she's awesome. She's certainly a crazy little one. She's definitely a bit different to her brother, but she was determined to be here by the seams of it. And we couldn't have been happier.
She was headed to your family regardless, wasn't she?
Absolutely. She was coming. Like, her, all of a sudden we were pregnant with her, and then her labor was from when I decided I was in labor to when she was born was about 3.5 hours. So she was just, coming like, yeah, full steam ahead. Like, guys, I'm here. She's one that's got FOMO. Like, she doesn't like to miss out on things. So she's just, yeah, she was determined to be with us and complete the family basically. So we couldn't be happier. I mean, it was a sad story that got such a happy ending, and I'm so lucky because not everyone is that lucky, you know, like people don't get that opportunity. So I feel so lucky and blessed that I could, you know, have these two babies fairly easily, I guess, in that, you know, it wasn't easy, but the pregnancy did go according to plan, everything, you know, their births went well, you know, so many more things could go wrong and they didn't. So I was really lucky and stoked.
I know. And as I said, you know, I'm sat here and I can see a photo of your beautiful family in front of me. And, you know, you're just this gorgeous family that you would just, you'd never know the heartache. And even to hear you say, I'm lucky, I just think, you know, obviously you've been through so much. But to be able to hear you say that you're lucky, and you are, because.
I know, you know, I am. I'm very lucky.
You are.
I've been pushed into that world of baby loss, and I still see it now, and I try and help people where I can, and yeah, and I have seen people who just, you know, something's gone wrong, or it can go so much worse. So I mean, obviously it was terrible what happened, but like I said, I always think that everything, you know, always could be worse, and I could not have my baby. So yeah, I'm super 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 lucky.
You're a very very strong woman.
Thank you.
And as I mentioned, I feel as though there's so many different, you know, topics we could keep talking about. There's, you know, even just listening to you speak, I'm like, oh, I'd love to touch on that. I'd love to touch on that. but I also know that your beautiful bubs are going to finish their nap any minute.
I know, anytime.
And I've got to get my two from school. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pop. I had some notes here on some resources, just for those who may be listening and just need some extra support. So what I'll do is I'll pop those in the show notes, Elise, and if there's anything that we've run out of time to touch on that you want to add as well, just you know, you and I will liaise after this chat anyway, and we can include that info. So for those listening, make sure you do read through the show notes. I hope that for those listening, it hasn't been too hard or too upsetting or confronting, and I hope that you can just take you know, one or two bits of I guess life lessons from Elise. So thank you so much for sharing your family's journey.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's it's a long one, so I probably blabbed on a lot, but I do appreciate being able to talk about them. And like you said, hopefully, even if it just helps one person, or helps one person help someone they know going through it, is really all I want. Thank you.
It will definitely help more than one person. I have no doubts at all. Thank you so much, Elise. And for those listening, I hope that you have gotten through this episode and taken at least one thing with you. So thank you, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.